Law Focus Podcast. Law Focus on Bafang 88.1. Point of information.
It has just gone 3 minutes after seven, and welcome to Law Focus this evening. You are tuned into Vibe FM 88.1, and I am listening to Weni together with Tepo Mohapi. He says that the song that just played right now is very relevant for the conversation we're going to be having tonight.
So no, it's relevant for the one that just occurred. You know? Hey, it's a great song, that one.
Oh,
Shem.
My gosh, throwback.
When I was a student, yeah, I know it was the one. But anyway, we're on Law Focus now. Let's forget about the love stuff and let's talk about the more serious one. But today's topic is not completely unconnected. We're talking about marriages. But in the show itself, we aim to deal with legal issues, and our objective in the show is both to inform you, our listener, about your legal rights, and we discuss the law and make sense of it and try to present it to you in a way that's relevant to you and maybe the way you can experience it, make use of it, or how you may be exposed to it at some stage in your life.
And tonight we're going to be discussing marriages. Maybe you're married, maybe you're not married, and you want to get married one day. And over the years, the government has passed many different legislations for different types of marriages. We're going to obviously get into that. But if you're not interested in marriage as well, you'd notice, I know it's not the right legal term, but cohabiting happens a lot. Some people call it fat and sit. And legally, it's not exactly the same thing, and we're going to get into it. It's something called universal domestic partnerships. You're going to get into that when you are not married in the sense of signing documents, but you can prove some kind of commitment of a relationship that you've had. And there are actually benefits to that when you separate or when someone dies and such kind of events that take place in life. So you would be interested to know how something like that would affect you.
Yeah, you would be very interested. So our law in South Africa has a couple of matrimonial laws, and you know, and laws that relate to matrimony, and it's the civil marriages. There are two of them: the civil union, the old civil marriage, and the recognition of customary marriages as well. And as Millicent has described, there's something called the universal partnership. I have particularly strong views on it. They're fairly old-fashioned. I don't think that they're going to be very popular, but I do have them, and I've seen how they operate in court, and I'll tell you how I feel about universal partnerships at when the time is right. But listen carefully.
I can't wait, because Tepo is a specialist in this. This is his area of expertise. So anything he says, it's good advice generally. He's speaking from experience.
Well, I mean, I won't be giving advice, but I'm going to give an idea of what I think of universal partnerships and whether they know or not they should exist and so on.
Yeah.
And I don't know that my view is going to be very popular, but I'll give it anyway.
Well, we trust your authority. But also to help us dissect the conversation further, we're going to be speaking to a principal legal practitioner from Legal Aid South Africa, and his name is Mr. Makgate Mkapele. He's going to be joining us on the line for the conversation and help us unpack marriage laws in South Africa.
Now, remember that it's not just us rattling off and you so much as listening there. We want you to be part of the conversation. We want you to take part if you can. And you can do that on Twitter using the hashtag, sometimes
it gets to you, ne?
It's at ViFM using the hashtag Law Focus, and our podcasts are available at iono.fm. You're tuned into the Law Focus on ViFM 88.1, and coming up after the break are our legal hotspots. I'm Tap Mahapi, and with me is Millicent Ndweni, and we are your hosts for tonight.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week. Legal Hotspots.
All right, let's jump straight into what is most interesting in the legal field and in the legal world today. It always affects you, hey? It's not something that happens in a vacuum. So, a bill was passed, Film and Publications Amendment Bill was passed recently, which aims to make a number of changes to the laws in respect to film and publication and disseminating of information. The primary focus of it was to protect children and so on from harmful content. But one of the things that have come out of it is the revenge porn thing. So revenge porn is basically when you distribute intimate and private images of an individual without their consent. Nowadays, a lot of people send nudes and send blood to one another, and they sext and so on. And then, when the relationship ends, the bitter and unhappy partner will then distribute these to friends and so on with the hope of embarrassing their former partner. Now, this kind of behavior could make you liable for, it's an offense now, and you could be fined 150,000 rand or a term of imprisonment not exceeding 2 years. They could be combined as well. So a fine and imprisonment. Mm. And then where the individual is identified or identifiable in those photographs or images, then it doubles. So then the fine could be up to 300,000 rand and a term of imprisonment not exceeding 4 years. All right. It's important to note that there isn't a commencement date yet, and so it's not yet effective, but it's a step in the right direction. Let's see, just, it's very difficult to regulate the law. It doesn't matter where in the world you are, not the law. It's very difficult to regulate the internet, no matter where in the world you are. So it's interesting to see how this will pan out, and it's got to be read with our other laws, such as domestic violence, harassment, all of those things. And if you read them all together, we may have something that we can work with in court, but let's see how it pans out.
Interesting one. Also, we found out this morning that Miss Vatsiswa Ndaga, who is a legendary actress in the South African space, in entertainment industry, wrote an open letter to the Minister of Arts and Culture, basically outlining some of the challenges that people, actors in the entertainment industry face. And some of the allegations that she made, she alluded to, include poor remuneration. That's why you wonder why you meet someone who is famous and well-known in a taxi sometimes. Alleged unfair contractual agreements, unfair treatment by producers, claims of bullying and intimidation. I mean, the list goes on and on. A lot of people did come out in support of her. Some of the people were people like Sello Kamakeka Ncube and Florence Masebe, who came out and said, yeah, viva, we definitely do agree with her. The minister has responded thus far to say that he does acknowledge receipt of the said letter, and we'll see how that will pan out for the entertainment industry to see how it will be regulated, also in terms of our basic conditions of Employment Act, the labor relations, because if you work, obviously those things should apply to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've had a few instances where I've had to represent fairly well-known artists, and I can tell you that that industry, for all of the glamour and glitz that it presents, it is brutal. It is savage.
Worse than law. Because law is tough.
Yeah, but I mean, it is brutal, brutal, brutal. And yeah, I'm not surprised that people are complaining. All right, moving on now to the IPED, the Independent Police Investigative Directorate, which is in the news. I don't know whether I've heard them being in the news for good reasons ever in my life, but okay, they're back in the news again. And their reasons, the reason is they're allegedly prematurely closing case without proper investigation so you can meet targets and attract more funding. The allegations that some investigators have been carrying out shortcuts in investigations, which go back as far as 7 years ago. This comes after a probe by the investigative unit or Viewfind and Eyewitness News, well, investigative journalists rather, let's call them that, revealing a paper trail of reports by the public protector and by IPED's risk and ethics department. And it points to a systematic failure to properly investigate cases. And some of them have been closed without real investigation, and they include rape, death as a result of police action, and death in police custodies. Now, IPED has, of course, dismissed these claims, saying there's no evidence that the investigations have been prematurely closed. The IPED is an extremely important body because it investigates the police and anything that they do. As a member of the public, you should be able to approach them. And I think that this probably isn't going to stop here. They should go a little bit deeper into this to find out really whether the complaints against the police that are investigated by IPED are in fact properly investigated. It's very difficult to get hold of the police and to hold them accountable for anything when the IPED isn't doing its job, as is alleged here. Very difficult. Just quickly, let's delve into the realm of politics. And we don't normally dabble too much into politics. However, we had the Institute of Race Relations stepping into the political arena last week in a spectacular fashion, where they almost stepping on the toes of the processes and the electoral procedures of the Democratic Alliance, which has caused all sorts of infighting, and they haven't backed down. It's been amazing to see how the Institute of Race Relations has gone from a position of saying, well, you know, it's fair comment, to now going to the extent of raising funds to try and save democracy. I don't know whether there's a long-term future for them as a credible institution of research anymore, if they are, as you know, invested in results of particular
political parties.
And as perhaps as media and as research institutes, quote unquote, I think we should be very, very, very careful of who it is we take our information from. Whether they're right or wrong is irrelevant. It's our motives, how we're approaching things, and whether or not it is our place to try and dictate to a body what they should or shouldn't do. Should we not allow that body to regulate itself, in effect?
An independent body.
Yes. I mean, the Democratic Alliance has got certain criteria and certain processes that it needs it to remove a person, to elect a person, to correct its wrongs, to change direction, and it doesn't need an outsider dictating to it in the name of democracy, quote unquote.
Mm, we'll see how that goes.
I feel strongly about that one, Shema.
You definitely do.
I had to mention
it. We had to go to politics.
We had
That's
to,
how no, strongly this matter is.
But we had to talk about that. We really did have to talk about that.
Yeah.
If they had done that to the ANC, people would be talking about it. If they had done that to the EFF, people would be talking about it. The mere fact that it's been done to the Democratic Alliance, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't talk about
it
as well.
About it,
we need to mention, whether we agree with what the article says or not is irrelevant. Got to talk about the fact that have they overstepped the mark by trying to dictate to a body, an existing body, what they can and can't do with their own processes.
Well, it's just gone 7:15, and you are tuned into Law Focus with Millicent and Tepo. After this little break that we're going to take, we're going to be speaking to Makgati Nkgapele, who is our attorney this evening representing Legal Aid South Africa.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week, it's Legal Hotspots. Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VowFam 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer.
Now, welcome back. Remember, today we're talking about marriages in South Africa, the laws and how they affect you, and also what happens if you don't choose to get married, or rather, if you choose not to get married and you choose to cohabit.
Yes.
What are the available protection for you? Yes.
Yeah.
And to see maybe what a universal partnership. Like I said, I have views on it, and I'll tell you about them. But remember to join us on Twitter at VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus.
Definitely. Right now we are on the line with Mr. Makgati Nkgapele. Mr. Makgati, welcome to Law Focus.
Thank you.
How are you?
Can't complain. And how are you, ma'am?
We are very well, thank you. We appreciate you taking your time to come and join us this evening. As you did here, we've been saying we're going to be talking about marriage, and you are aware that this is obviously something that you also have a specialty in. And we want to understand, firstly, marriage in South Africa, is it something that a lot of people actually still want to pursue? How important do you think it is for a lot of South Africans?
Yes, there is a growing trend of girls that who don't get married but choose to live like married couples. But I would still say marriage is still very much legally relevant in South Africa, because even though people choose not to get married but live as married couples, we find that there are a lot of disputes that they get into, and then they want to separate. And if they are not legally married, you find that they have not formalized their relationship, then it is now a headache for the court to interpret what their kind of setup or the arrangement they have was all about. Because this people will always form part of everyday life. So if people are legally married and they've chosen the marital regime, it is easy for the court to officiate on their disputes when they want to dissolve their relationship.
Yeah.
So I would like to say definitely marriage is still legally relevant in South Africa.
So obviously it's there to make sure that it protects us who, when we get into these relationships, it just makes it easier. But we also know that there are different types of marriages that the South African law recognizes, such as the old civil marriage, the civil union, as well as customary marriage. Why do you think it's important that our country has these three different legislations rather than just one marriage act that regulates all types of marriages?
Yeah, historically, we have a very divided country with different laws governing different sections of the population. And the dawn of democratic dispensation in South Africa brought about the Bill of Rights, which in the Constitution we find under Chapter 2 of saying. And to actually qualify what I'm saying, I would say, in the olden days, civil marriages were entered into by people of European descent and later on to sections of the community that were in urban areas, those who were Christians and the like. And we had customary marriages which were actually entered into mostly by people in the countryside governed by their chiefs and kings. Mm. And they were according to their different traditions. And there was a divide, and the advent of democracy brought about the Bill of Rights. Then we had the Civil Unions getting into play. Civil Unions Act of 2006, which also legalized same-sex marriages. Civil partnerships can be formed by same-sex couples and have the same rights and responsibilities and legal consequences as marriages. You can attest to this that same-sex relationships were scorned as they were looked at as taboo. But with the Bill of Rights, all people are equal, and they should and must be seen as equal before the law. And as such, their rights must be protected as equally the other sections of the community of rights. So if they seek to enter into same-sex marriages, they are free now to enter into those marriages and be regulated as such.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, it's just changing of the law to suit the circumstances as the country has developed, eh?
No. We can't go there to say we're changing the law to suit the circumstances, but the Bill of Rights, everyone has got a right.
Mm.
And with the advent of the Bill of Rights, it doesn't mean that if other people were excluded and said so, when did they come up? Crisis decision dawned on us. We had to re-look into our laws and see if ever our laws fit with all the changes that are happening in the world of recognizing each and every individual's right. So, same-sex partners were excluded and it was found to be unfair. So, because that was discrimination on the choice of the lifestyle that they had.
Yeah.
And that was unconstitutional.
Right.
As the Bill of Rights says, you cannot discriminate against other people because of their religion, creed, or whatever they choose to be doing, unless what they are doing is illegal. That will be discrimination, but there's nothing illegal about them entering into relationships.
Right. Now, I often come across people who will say, you know, I got married in, let's say, in rural Natal. I got married there customarily. And the marriage, okay, it wasn't registered or anything like that, but it was a customary marriage. And then they're working in Johannesburg, Shem, they fall in love, and they get married. And, of course, the wife in Johannesburg will say, but no, this is a separate woman. I will say, no, it's customary marriage, nothing. I want you to go and sign. And now you find a man who is, strictly speaking, he's married down in Natal, customarily, and he's married to somebody else in Johannesburg. What are the consequences of the second marriage? Or the first one, for that matter?
As long as there is proof that there is marriage, customary marriage, which was entered into before, it cannot be overlooked because this man came to the reef and entered into a civil marriage. We've got a lot of such cases, and we've got decisions by the court saying the first customary marriage is taken into consideration. Given the merit of each and every case, it will depend as to whether these people are all still alive. If they are still alive, then the civil marriage is null and void. But there are certain circumstances where you find that people have already passed, some of the parties have already passed on, and the court will weigh as to the prejudice which will be suffered. It will depend on whether what circumstances led to this person marrying the second wife and whether there are issues. And it is in terms of inheritance, we cannot say that then the other wives and her children will never inherit. Then the court will have to decide according to the merit. And in certain circumstances, you'll find that the court will put them at par and say all their marriages are customary marriage, and then they will inherit equally as spouses of the deceased.
And then another odd one, which is relates to customary marriages, is you find there's a valid customary marriage, but the marriage doesn't then succeed. And people say, but hang on, we are now separating. And what they do then is they write a letter from one family to the other family to say, listen, this marriage between our children is over and we all agree that it's finished. My understanding is that in our law, a marriage can only be dissolved by death and divorce, or divorce. So what happens in a situation where you have a valid customary marriage, but a divorce was never instituted, but between the parties, everybody knows that it's over? What do we do with that kind of situation? Is it over, or do they still need to go for a divorce?
In recent times, that is not a divorce. All marriages, customary or otherwise, should be dissolved or divorced in a court of law. I believe, if my memory serves me well, those were happening even before the Black Administration Act or during the times of the Black Administration Act, where people were going to vote at the chief scroll or in the magistrate court. But all marriages now are divorced or dissolved in the court.
Okay.
There is the divorce court or the high court.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are in conversation with Mr. Makgate Nkgapele, who is a legal practitioner from Legal Aid, and he is helping us to unpack everything that we would like to know about marriage laws in South Africa. So, Mr. Makgate, we're going to just move the conversation a bit now to speaking about universal partnerships, which we understand. Maybe you can just define it for us. What should we understand universal partnerships as, and how are they different to marriage?
Oh, universal partnerships are what most of us in South Africa would refer to as a pattern set cohabitation. It where two unmarried parties have lived together for an extended period, and they usually share responsibilities and obligations that are like married couples. They may have an express or tacit agreement in place pertaining to how their income, expenses, assets are dealt with. But in South Africa, it doesn't automatically grant parties who cohabit legal rights. They have to prove that their cohabitation amounts to a universal partnership. That's the little that I can shed light on.
Now, I was saying to the listeners a little bit earlier that I've got some strong views about universal partnerships. And I wonder, I'm just going to tell you what I think, that should they have a place in our law? Why is it that an individual who says, but I do not want the burdens, the problems, the issues of a marriage, for example, the obligation to support, blah, 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 all of the obligations that come with a marriage, I don't want them. But should this relationship end, I want at least the benefits of the separation. Why should the law, and in fact South Africa at all, recognize such a marriage? Why don't the parties simply get married?
Let me be frank and make it this situation akin to a situation where somebody who is a father has got an option to adopt a child but doesn't adopt this child but looks after this child who's not biologically his. And he's been looking after this child, having all obligations on this child, and then upon his death, this child is left with nobody to take care of it. It is the wishes of the deceased to have taken care of this child. So we cannot leave the child and say, because the child is not biologically his, it is not his responsibility to maintain. The child can still claim support from the estate of this deceased person as long as the child can prove that the deceased has been maintaining this child all along and his intention was to continue maintaining this child. So if two other people elect to live together and they either tacitly or impliedly so share all the benefits, and as I've already indicated, it would be unfair of us to say this person, if they die interstate, then their entire estate should devolve to the blood relatives, omitting this person. And if the intention displayed was for the deceased to have carried on living with this person as partners that were to enjoy all the labor and profits of their estate.
So the law
is there to try and harmonize whatever and regulate whatever agreements or, for a lack of better word, I would say, situations that we as individual people create.
For us. Okay. I hear that one.
It's always advisable. That's why I'm, in my first answer, I said it is always advisable for people to make that decision. If ever you engage in such, you must have an agreement in writing so that the court should be able to easily navigate through your intentions and to
I recognize your example where the universal partnership is dissolved by death. All right. One can be sympathetic in that situation. But in many cases you find that people want to dissolve a universal partnership because the relationship has ended, and one party will, and it's often the man, will say, I don't know what she's talking about. What universal partnership? I just lived with this person for 8 years. I don't know what she's talking about. And then the wife will say, or the other partner will say, no, but I gave him the best 20 years of my life. He says, but why didn't you marry? And it's that kind of disconnect that I complain about, because now we burden the system with having to go through each and every little intent. And, well, not each and every, but to create, you know, the situation where we recognize all the requirements of universal partnership, whereas if it was a marriage, we could just say, oh, you're married, in or out of community or property, with or without the accrual. Okay, this is how we're going to do it. But this... Yes, I'm just saying that this universal partnership thing creates a very big burden. Even a single case can run for months through litigation simply based on the fact that there isn't really any cogent agreement there.
But we can work relationships which have got marital characteristics from other relationships that exist and are also resolved by our courts. I will equate this with a simple example of undue enrichment. One could also argue that if you did not have an agreement with the owner of the property that you are leasing, why should you go and improve and expect that person to reimburse you at a later stage? So why should you divorce this one of personal relations between people from other severe cases which take the very same form.
It's a tough one.
I hope I've answered you.
Yes. Well,
he will never be satisfied. No, he's determined that it's wrong. Get married if you want to get married. Don't get married if you don't want to get married.
I'm really, and don't
enjoy the benefits of marriage. But I'm interested.
If you find two lawyers in the same room, agree.
Well, maybe you can then tell us what are the requirements for this partnership, you know, that make it so special and so important that the law has seen it fit that it needs to be protected so much, so similarly to a marriage. What should a person who wants to get into this kind of partnership know?
That's why I've alluded to the fact that you cannot just be in a relationship with a person and then after some few months you claim universal partnership. Hence, I've said the parties must have lived together for an extended period.
Do we know what extended period means? Is there any...
It will depend on case to case, but believe me, it will be... the court will look into each and every case, to the merits of each and every case, and what was the intention of those parties. But believe me, an extended period of time should be a reasonable extended period of time.
Yeah.
And I don't want to just put a period to it. Because our court always judge each and every case according to its merit, they will have to determine that. But believe you me, if people have stayed together for 12 months, I don't think that is an extended period of time. That is my own opinion to the thing. But arguments can be based on the merits of each and every case and whether what do those people share responsibilities and obligations like married couples.
Of a joint household, etc., etc.
Yes.
Okay. I wanted now to we've discussed when you're married. Okay, fine. We've discussed when you're not married and you have universal partnership. And I now see there's a trend. I don't know if it's new or not, but it's sitting on my... a few of them have now arrived at my desk and I'm perplexed. Because you find that people are married out of community of property without the accrual, and then in order to make...
Do you want to explain quickly to the listener the accrual and without the accrual?
If you're married in community of property, what's mine is yours, what's yours is mine, okay? If you're married out of community of property, it means what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. Mm. If you're married out of community of property with the accrual, it's still what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. But at the dissolution of the marriage, we then see how much your estate has grown, how much my estate has grown, and there's a trade-off between us at the dissolution of the marriage. Mm. It's a very equitable system, right? Okay, so we have now, if we go back to our question, we have people who are married in out of community of property and they've excluded the accrual. Both of them, they've agreed, no accrual. Mm-hmm. And then at the divorcing time, they say, but we've got a universal partnership. And I say to myself, but how? Why? Why are we allowing this?
Does it make any sense? So you are married in community of property.
Out of community of property.
But when the marriage comes to an end, then people are now saying that it's a universal partnership.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just explain to the listener very quickly. So if you're married in community of property, everything is shared, more or less. I'm just... Quickly, 50-50, right? If you're married out of community of property, they're two separate estates. And then you can also add the accrual to it, which regulates how you're going to divide any accrual that... Okay, right. But there's also a trend that I'm picking up where people are married out of community of property and they've excluded the accrual. By agreement, they exclude the accrual. So what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. Of course, you can still claim a rehabilitative maintenance, all those things. But then they also say, but we have... a universal partnership, say in respect of a house or in respect of a business or in respect of, I don't know, an investment or something along those lines. What's your take on that, sir?
I don't think we'll do justice to this question because I am in support of your view that if ever there is a marital regime which is chosen, we have to sit by that marital regime up until dissolution. Mm. We cannot be jumping to say... because the marriage don't suit our cases, then now we want to invent something that was not there in the first place. Because if there was a universal partnership, there shouldn't have been a marriage out of communal property without alcohol.
Because the
should have just stayed as a universal partnership.
Mm. Mm. Because, I mean, the accrual can...
Won't be doing justice if, because we are swimming in the same boat, in the same lake, me and you on this.
On that one, okay.
So
I see.
It wonders somebody who strongly believes that they have a thing, because I will definitely challenge such to end on my death.
Okay. Do you see the future of marriage in South Africa? Across the world, I could stand corrected, but more and more young people are less interested in marriage than they were before. Do you see marriage as still being the route to go, or do you see the universal partnerships becoming more and more part of, and you know, co-parenting and so on, becoming more and more part of our society? Should attorneys and listeners and everybody else ready themselves for the slight changes that are coming?
I believe we have a lot of marriages in South Africa, and we have a great lot of divorces happening and remarriages.
Mm.
But I believe even our public are not well connected with these other types of marital regimes, because people only marry, it's always in community of property.
Yeah.
And there is a belief that if you marry out of community of property, it means there is no love. Why do you want to keep other properties as yours, mine as mine?
Yes.
And this is a very bad precedent, because actually marriage out of community of property can also save the spouses.
Mm.
Because if you're married out of property without accrual, then why do you have to think about divorce and protection? Because if ever it's for the children will always be provided for in the Maintenance Act.
Mm.
They don't follow the marital regime of parents. So if you are business people, why marry in community property? Because the other one will also drag the one into their death, business death.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're married out of community property, if one spouse is reckless in their business dealings, then the other spouse's property is safe. Then the children don't have to be raised by both spouses. If one is liquidated, are liquidated, then the other one remains with a liquid as she can be able to provide for the entire family.
Sure. Yeah. Well,
I think people need to be advised correctly in terms of marital regimes, and not always believe that the show of love is marriage in community of property.
That is so true. But also, I don't know if you're aware of this other trend that has been happening, where people who are genuinely in love decide to go and divorce on paper, but the intention is really not that they wanted to divorce, only so that they can claim from pension funds, from the estates, whatever money that they need to get by. What's your take on that as well? What are the legal ramifications of such decisions that a lot of couples have been finding themselves making?
The intention of the legislator was correct, and if you can see, the trend grew immediately. The law changed to say the spouses can claim the other spouse or each other's pensions immediately after divorce.
Mm.
When it was to wait up until the other one's pensions expire, or they go on pension or they retire, they were not so many methods of payment. But now people agree to divorce because they are broke. They just want to to get each other's house so that they can be afloat. Really, I don't know how. These are a matter of serious concern, because some can see that this is happening, but you don't have evidence to can support what your suspicions, but this is now overbidding our court rules, and even the service providers who are giving services for free are seeing a floodgate of divorce matters. And there is no law that because there's no law saying if you divorce today, you cannot remarry.
Yeah, you can remarry tomorrow. Nobody can stop you.
So now you see people marching to the divorce court hand in hand for their final determination of the cases.
But
they leave courts hand in hand. So you wonder what is it.
Well, I mean, it could result in extreme, I'll put a proviso, it could result in real extreme poverty in old age, because you know you put away maybe 5 rand today, but in 20 years that 5 rand
they are pension savings now, but forgetting about later on
in life. But I mean, people do have that. I just want to ask you, do you think that the South African culture, I don't say the specific, I'm just a broad South African way of doing things, of actually going to, you know, in many countries, people go to an attorney or go to a legal practitioner prior to getting married. And the only reason they do that is to try and find out what works out best for them. Is that growing in South Africa, or do we still need to educate people about that? I'm just touching on your
matrimonial,
regimes. The comment that you made before about how you can get married in and out and blah, blah. Do you think that South Africans know enough or consulting enough prior to marriage to be able to be informed? Do they know that they should consult prior to marriage?
Unfortunately, in my entire career experience as an admitted attorney, which stretches for more than 18 years now, I haven't consulted with a person prior to their marriage, but all those have consulted is when they are in trouble, now they want to divorce. I don't know. I can only generalize and say it's not happening in other sectors. Since I've been now almost 12 years in the public service, having left my private practice, I don't know whether in private practice it happens. But I would say this needs to be looked at seriously, and institutions that are responsible have to educate people about
it. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you that it does happen, but it's a certain economic group that it happens to. It doesn't matter whether they're black or white, or but it's a sort of middle class, upper middle class group that, yes, they will consult very quickly, but it's a very, very uncommon in my experience as well, which is tragic, because you live with the consequences at divorce, not when things are good and happy and lovey.
Yeah, as I've already indicated, I've been 12 years dealing with the indigent.
Yeah, well,
you
we would.
Understand.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, but the work that is done there is extremely important. We wouldn't have a lot of people, you know, wouldn't be able to access legal services without your assistance.
True.
We would like to thank you very much for your time tonight and all of the insights that you've given us. We appreciate it, even though on the universal partnership, the existence thereof, I'm not there, but thank you. At least you've given people some reasons why
they shouldn't
they
get
should
married.
Exist, you know, why universal partnership should exist. Thank you very much.
Oh my goodness, Sapo, you just had to go there.
Yeah. I mean, the universal partnership, maybe because I'm an old man and I'm old-fashioned, and I'm not an old man, but I'm old-fashioned. It's just something where I can accept it existing where the universal partnership or the relationship is ended by death, yes. But where the parties have split up and they haven't gotten married, it's just
you don't feel comfortable,
you know,
about
because
it.
You can walk down to Home Affairs and get married. It takes you
2 minutes.
It takes you there's Home Affairs, so it takes you the whole day. But it's not a long process. It really isn't a long process to do that. And if you don't want to go to the effort of getting married, I'm just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I'm just uncomfortable. Let's not cheapen marriage.
I think when we get back, we'll just round up our conversation this evening after this.
Law Focus is produced by the Wits Radio Academy. Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Welcome back to Law Focus. It is 48 minutes after 7, and you are listening to Tepo and Millicent right here on Vibe M88.1. So I think we had a very interesting conversation with Mr. Makgatheng Kgapele from Legal Aid, talking about marriage, and the conversation shifted also into what we call universal partnerships, which is not your legal kind of marriage.
Yeah.
But it really does have the same kind of benefits, particularly when it dissolves.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So when someone dies or when it's terminated, nowadays lawyers actually really deal with those kind of issues.
Yeah.
Not everyone sees eye to eye about it, but we can see maybe why it might be important sometimes.
To have it. But hang on, just to make the quick distinction there is that, you know, the other relationships, you know, the three marriages that you get,
civil
either
union,
customary or civil union or civil marriage, they're all ended by divorce. A universal partnership, you can't speak of a divorce as such.
Mm.
It's when the relationship ends and then you approach the court and say, but what I want here is you or the court to recognize that what we had was a universal partnership and therefore I'm entitled to XYZ.
So
it's an extremely cumbersome manner of establishing your right to something, and it can be very expensive as well. So let's not equate them too quickly, just make that slight distinction.
Mm. And about that, so I'm in a relationship, I've been living with this person for the past 15 years, and now the relationship comes to an end. We bought a house together, we bought other different types of assets together.
Yeah.
How does the court then divide these assets? Is it selling the house, selling these properties so that we share the money in half, something of the sort? How does it actually work?
Yeah. Listen, if you bought the house together, then it doesn't really matter because it's registered in both of your names. You're both your co-purchasers. So it would be registered at the deeds office in both of your names anyway. So you'd be co-owners.
Of course, though, living together would not be...
So it's neither here nor there whether you live together.
Yeah.
What might be of more interest would be when one party buys the house in their own name while in this relationship. And then you have a domestic, universal partnership.
Mm.
It's in those instances that normally you're now going to have a dispute about who owns what. And what. Now, what you do is you establish that we are in a marriage-type relationship. We have an either tacit or an explicit agreement to support one another, you know. And then your behavior over the course of the relationship must be in accordance with that desire to have a universal partnership. So if you guys are sharing household expenses, you have joint bank accounts. Not you don't have to, but that's an example, having joint bank accounts, municipal expenses, making investments to each other's mutual benefit, etc. Having the other party as your beneficiary on documents and so on. Those would all indicate that actually, hey, we have something more than a casual relationship, which we are not interested in. We do perhaps have a universal partner.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the situation.
Yeah.
But it should be distinguished from you owning the house outright.
Yeah.
You could appoint somebody to liquidate it as well, you know, to say, but if the court says, yeah, there's a universal partnership, this person actually owns a portion of the house, you need to pay them X amounts, and then the court can decide that.
Because I guess my fear was also that, can you imagine, when you get into a relationship, no one really, like, signs an agreement, who would say, okay, we're moving in together, our intention is, you know, so you could imagine how difficult it would be to have that in paper, so that when it does terminate, then you've got this kind of evidence that you can prove as your, you know, you having had that intention of being in a serious kind of domestic relationship.
Yeah.
No one ever does that, to be quite honest. So those
but that's something that should really change in our country.
The what?
The idea that you can't separate romance from marriage. Because marriage is something that is a transaction which has patrimonial consequences for you for the rest of your life. You are tied in with this person financially, of course, emotionally, and you got to be able to talk about those things. We are not shy to talk about the fact that my fiance, if you've got a drinking problem, I mean, I got to sit the fiance down and say, but hang on, you know, what's going on with you? You know, if they have a spending habit, which is just not in alignment with what I believe in, you got to be able to have that conversation and say, but this way of spending is just not for me. I don't know. I love you. I love you, but I'm not going to be dragged into your debt. Perhaps we should consider marriage out of community of property and excluding their crew. Or it could be very practical. You could be involved with someone who's a professional person, maybe an accountant or who needs to have personal liability. And to protect the other one from any mistakes that they might make in business, you might get married out of community.
Definitely.
Or have that universal partnership that you want.
Then. Yeah. The one that you're not.
Hey, I'm not. I really, I know. No.
Well, we hope that for you who was listening this evening, we managed to kind of cover some of the things that you are interested in, whether or not you are married, if you are interested in marriage, or you are going to go the option of the universal partnership. Either way, all of us are protected under the South African law. And Mr. Makgatheng Kgapele from Legal Aid South Africa is the one who joined us this evening, giving us contributing to our conversation. And he gave us, I think, a very good way of looking and analyzing these legal issues. Note also that we do have podcasts that are available for all our shows. vits.journalism/law. So that's where you can find all our /law. So vits.journalism/law. That's where you can find all our shows. This one, in due time, it will be up, and all the other shows that we have ever had. It will help you, even for those of you who are studying law, and sometimes you need to do research. Take time to listen to those conversations.
Yeah, but don't forget to study, hey?
Of course, that is part of studying. And up next, we're going to have the voice of hip hop with, you know, Sizwe the MC, DLXL, as well as Celeste King. And this evening, from our producer Simba Honde, our technical producer Kutlwano Sirame, our law focus researcher Sisetu Zingelwa, Nalkama Mate, Sitle Monama, Sipati Makafani, Tepo Mohapi, and of course myself, Melissa Ndumeni, thank you for tuning into Law Focus tonight.
Good night.
Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Law Focus podcast is also available on iTunes. Search Law Focus.